Tonight is about Finland. You were listening, in fact you weren't listening, you were gifted 40 minutes of your life listening to some of the cutting edge acid Finnish funk. If that's not got you in the mood tonight, then Christ, nothing will. So will you please give a huge, hot, tap welcome for the wonderful Mr. Danny Dorling.
Thank you. Let me try to get on the bar stool for the first time in almost 2 years. If I stumble, I haven't done this for at least 18 months. So it's lovely to be out, it's lovely to see you. Have we got any Finns in the audience? No? Brilliant. Because the first thing I've got to tell you, as the train goes past, is that I am not an expert on all things Finnish. In fact, I've only been to Finland twice, and I've only ever been to Helsinki. So I want to explain to you why I came to write a book about Finland, what I think it tells us, and then if you like, we can have a moan about where we live at the moment. But it's a kind of better informed moan than you would otherwise have. How many of you have met somebody from Finland? Okay, fair number. I won't go through and ask you all your stereotypes. I will just tell you, to begin with, when I met my first Finn. I don't tend to live a very exciting life, but this was one of the more exciting moments in my life about 20 years ago. I'd been invited to somewhere called the Exodus Collective. Exodus Collective is based on the Marsh Farm Estate in Luton, and it is the idea of creating a utopian society where people could live and do what they liked and be who they wanted to be. And I thought it was a pretty amazing thing going on, admittedly with quite a few drugs which kind of helped make the finances of the place work. It's a big ex-psychiatric hospital with the word Exodus written on the roof, so you can see it from a helicopter if you're going over. And on that particular night in the Exodus Collective in the Marsh Farm Estate, they had the M11 Theatre Group. If you remember the M11 protests. We've got any M11 protesters? No. The M11 theatre group were there. There were other social activists there. They had a stage. They were doing something about how you bulldoze a motorway. And the police helicopter was just coming over with its searchlight, lighting up the stage. And I thought, you couldn't make this up. This is actually quite incredible. The collective was full of young people, mainly living on benefits at the time. And I was standing next to a bearded man who hadn't said anything to me at all. And so I did the standard thing you say when you're English and not very imaginative, which is, where are you from? And he said, Finland, and that was it. And then we watched the theatre group on the stage, and we saw where they're doing, and we heard Bob Marley, that's why it's called Exodus, playing the background. And I thought this was great. And he turned to me and he said, how can you live in a country like this? And his point was, it was a police helicopter. We were being harassed. It wasn't great that people were having to live off the benefits they were. Okay, it was one night, it was fun, and we had beer. But it made me think, and I've always thought, remember that, how can you live in a country like this? I'm just going to read you what somebody else has written about this book. Because I quite liked it, and because I wasn't quite sure how to do this tonight. So this is from Tony Lurkoff's book. Tony Lurkoff is an expert on Finland. He's written a whole series of books on Finland, of which his last one, only just published, is called Finish Off with Finland. And in the end of the introduction, he writes about this book. And he writes, that Anika Kologian and I met in 2017 in Cambridge, at an equality event, and at that event people kept on putting graphs of how unequal or equal different parts of Europe were and which was doing well in various ways, and Finland always ended up on one end of these graphs and England or the UK ended up on the other. So what Anika and I decided to do, Anika is Finnish, speaks six languages, is highly competent, and was about 21 at the time, that is your average Finnish kind of graduate. We decided to have a look at why the statistics about Finland's education, healthcare, political system were so good, and take a detailed look about what's happening in Finland and what doesn't work in Finland, because it can't all be that good. Why it isn't a utopia. When Tony Lurcock read the first few pages of our book, he had a deja vu feeling. He thought he'd been here before, when he read writing that British travellers had written in the 1930s about Finland, about how homogeneous the society was, about how the standards of living attained by different sections of the community were similar, and the love affair that these people were having with Finland travelling from Britain in the 1930s. However, he then says that our book is a rigorous and yet meaningful academic study, written with a huge range of statistics and sources. A review of the book on Finland in the 1930s, writing in the Spectator, that wonderful magazine, goes whispering, "It's a mixed pleasure for us who live further south to read this book. I think the British readers of Utopia will probably feel the same." Now this is a nice little review from Tony, because unlike those 1930s travellers of Finland, I am not somebody who knows that much about Finland. I'm not somebody in love with Finland who goes to Finland all the time. What Anika and I had done was look at the numbers. Now, what I haven't done for you tonight is what I normally would do, which is put up a whole load of slides and pictures. Partly I haven't done that because I've realised it's boring. Partly because 18 months of Zoom has given me a kind of fear of anything to do with the screen. But what was interesting about those 1930s travel writers about Finland was in a way they all got it terribly wrong. Finland was not a homogeneous country in the 1930s. It was deeply divided. It had the kind of social divisions that we had in the 1930s, the same income inequality gaps that we had. But it was just poorer. And because it was poorer, they thought it was homogeneous. But it wasn't homogeneous. It had gone through a civil war, a terrible civil war called Terror, in which tens of thousands of people had been slaughtered. What Anika and I were doing was not writing about the stereotypes. What we were looking at was the numbers. What do the numbers actually tell you if you go into great detail? And what I thought I'd do is, and I'll see how far I get with this, it may not be too far, if I just read you some of the things that are exceptional about Finland. Finland's only 0.07% of the world's population, and 0.07% of the world's land area as well. Around about 2018-2019, Statistics Finland decided to produce a list of where Finland ranked first, second or third in the world on various social indicators. So bear with me and I'll just give you a few of these. These are the appendix of our book. It's the most politically stable country in the world by one international measure. It's the safest country in the world. It's the fourth best country in the world by the Good Country Index. I won't go into what these indices do. It has the best governance in the world in 2018. Ranked second best in 2019. The police and internal security as a whole were the second best in the world, apparently. The lowest level of organised crime in the world. Next to Norwegians and Icelanders, Finns have the second least insecure feeling people in the world. Finland's judicial system is the most independent in the world. After the Danes, the elections are the freest and most reliable. The third lowest level of corruption in the world, the third most prosperous country in the world by world ranking. Protection of property rights in Finland is the best in the world. So this isn't a socialist utopia. They look after property rights in Finland. Access to official information in Finland is the best in the EU. Finnish banks are the soundest in the world. The pension system is the third best in the world out of the 34 countries ranked. Third highest level of personal freedom. Fourth greatest press freedom in the world. UK ranks one of the lowest on that. Denmark and Sweden and Finland, the most socialist just countries, of the richest world countries, Finland ranks third highest in dedication to policies that benefit people in poorer nations. Something we cut back on a couple of weeks ago. Best country in the world in comparison of human well-being. Third best country adhering to the rule of law. Third highest ranked country. Now I can go on. I won't, but I can go on for another 80 of these. I can go on through what you've probably heard, the education statistics of Finland, and how many languages the average Finnish student is fluent in. Not our kind of, do you get a GCSE in French ability level, actually being able to do, or how good they are at maths. There are two countries, by the way, that you can't name if you go into the Department of Education in London. The two countries are Finland, because they're sick of hearing of Finland, but the other is Scotland, which is interesting. Because the number of pupils permanently excluded each year in Scotland is less than half a dozen. And the DfE don't want to know. And it's really interesting, this country. I could talk to you about housing in Finland, and how it's the only country in Europe to have almost eradicated homelessness. And I say almost, because if you say eradicated homelessness, the Finns get really, really annoyed. Because they count that 16-year-old who's still homeless, and the 32-year-old, and the 34-year-old, individually, that haven't got a home. They have a housing first policy, which you may have heard of. We can go through, I can talk about employment. I can talk about how Finland has the most family-friendly employment policies. On European Eurostat rankings, this isn't just for people who are doing well, not just for graduates, and we have these numbers for graduates in all European countries. But for people with a higher secondary education and for people with the worst education, Finland has the most flexible working hours. Which means that if you try and get a pizza at 10 o'clock at night in Helsinki, it's really, really difficult. Because nobody wants to work at 10 o'clock at night, and they don't have to work at that time in Finland. I can go on and on and on about it. And then what you tend to get is, well, what about the alcohol? What about the drinking? So the news on the alcohol and the drinking is, yes, it was a problem. It's now much less of a problem than it was. What about the suicides? Yes, there was a higher suicide rate. It's been going down dramatically because the Finns looked at it and dealt with it. What about the gambling? Yes, there was a problem with gambling. What do? They nationalised gambling. So there is no gambling in Finland, but private gambling is not allowed. None of these kind of online gambling that we have here to reduce the problems of gambling. Pragmatic, boring, steady. One problem after another, after another, after another. Now, all that you can observe, but what is really hard is to try to work out why then. Why Finland? So I talked to some people in Finland. I talked to an advertising executive. I talked to a conservative mayor of a city whose politics went to the left of Corbyn, but he was a Finnish conservative. And I talked to a geography professor, obviously because I'm a geography professor, whose second job was deputy head of military intelligence in Finland. Because there aren't that many people in Finland. And can you imagine, this geography professor is just as much a kind of inequality person as I am, in fact more. Can you imagine the government allowing me to be deputy in charge of MI5? Yeah, and that's part of the history, of course, of, you know, you don't sit that near to Russia and not to worry. Finland is full of guns. An enormous number of guns, but an incredibly low murder rate. What do Finns say when you ask them about this? And there's one statistic I haven't mentioned is the World Happiness Report, which Finns are a bit sick of hearing about, but they ranked first, I think 2018, 2019, 2020, maybe 20, we just don't bother looking anymore, they certainly haven't ranked second. For a long time. When Finland first began to hit these figures on the statistics, it was with education, and it was a shock. they haven't actually expected it. As more and more things begin to be measured internationally, within their development goals and so on, Finland ends up more often at the top. Now, of course, somewhere always has to be at the top, but somewhere doesn't have to be at the top quite as often as Finland is. Right? It doesn't make sense. It knocks spots off Sweden and Norway. And it's poorer. And that may be, that and chance, I'll come back to chance at the end, but that and chance may be quite a lot which has to do with this. More so than Sweden or Norway, Finland has looked after its best bottom quarter, as it's called. The children doing worse at school. In Norway they have selection. I don't know if it's age 11, but round about then. In Finland they spend more money on the children who do worse at school. It may seem really obvious to do this, but other Scandinavian nations do not necessarily do it. Quite why they do it may be related to Finland's history of emigration. For centuries you just left. If you could, you got out, you went. It was the poorest part of Europe. It was a colony. It was a colony of Sweden, it was a colony of Russia, I think it was a colony of Denmark at some time. It was perpetually a colony. And you left and you went somewhere else. You went to Canada, you went to America, you went elsewhere in Europe. And you're most likely to go if you are in the bottom quarter. If you can't get out, because what have you got to live for? So Finland invested most in that bottom quarter. And I'm generalising, I know I'm not here because I'm cocky and somebody's going to tell me later that actually comes from Finland. But one of the reasons to invest in that bottom quarter was to prevent the migration, but also because your returns to society of spending more on the children who do worse are much greater than spending on the children who do best. Now, ironically, we can have a laugh now if you want in Britain about this. You know who the children are who we spend the most on. You know what £35,000 a year at school gets you, because he's our Prime Minister. And our last Prime Minister, and his cabinet and so on. We are the opposite country in Europe when it comes to spending on children. We spend the most on those who least need it, and we spend the least on those who most need it. But Finland was doing other things earlier. Finland introduced free school meals for all just after the Second World War, because it had to. Because otherwise the children would starve, but it kept it. So it's not called free school meals in Finland, it's just called school lunch. And that idea, we simply don't have. I was reading today an account from 1891, when some of the very first experiments in Britain were occurring about giving food at school. And they were opposed by one of Charles Booth's co-workers, on the basis that this would simply encourage the residuum to breed. So we have had anti-school meal rhetoric for a very, very long time. Finland was forced because of the situation it was in. It was on the wrong side in that war. Quite good kind of news management. You don't tend to associate Finland with Germany in the Second World War, but it was on the wrong side. And that, in hindsight, is beneficial. Germany has done very well compared to the UK on the wrong side in that war. Japan, longest life expectancy in the world, one of the least equal countries in the world, wrong side on that war. Losing a war is a really good way of refreshing your society. You end up employing a different set of elites than the ones you had before. And it turns out, I like generalisations, that almost any new set of elites are better than the ones you had before, because the ones you had before have learned how to feather their own nest, look after their own kind. We, maybe in some ways the opposite of Finland, have not really lost a war apart from one in 1688 that we decided to call the Glorious Revolution instead, and that's part of our problems. But to kind of narrow this down, and to sort of start talking a bit about the luck, it need not have been this way. There was no need for it necessarily to happen. you can look back and you can create an amazing history of activists. You can look at who was arguing for comprehensive education in Finland in the 1960s to get away from the grammar school system that they had with segregated people, often allowing the children of the whites, the ruling class faction in the terror, into the grammar schools and the children of the red into what affected the secondary models. And those activists came to somewhere which was even more progressive in the 1960s. That's here, to see how it might be done. Right? And if they hadn't done that, if they haven't travelled to the UK and to the USA to look at attempts to desegregate US schools in the 1960s, Finland might not have generated its education system. It might have kept one like Norway. Norway does very well because of oil and it's rich. There are other reasons as well, but the oil really does help. Finland doesn't have that. Those activists, those campaigners, have been crucial in hindsight. You can look at the left party in Finland. I really like looking at the left party. Whenever I'm going to annoy somebody in the room, if I haven't already, whenever I'm invited to speak to some faction on the left in London, it's almost always in London, I email them the website of the left party in Finland, which is a combination of all their left parties and the women's party in Finland. It's all run by women, it's got lots of pink balloons, and there are no factions. Well, there are factions, but they're all one party. And they're in government. They're part of the coalition. You know, imagine that, if your politics had ever been on the far left. Imagine the far left being a normal part of government, seen as a serious endeavour. And it just annoys people on the left in Britain to suggest maybe you could come together and do that. Of course they've got PR like most of Europe. But the working together that occurs between the left party, the Swedish-speaking party, the Social Democrats and the Greens creates this alliance, which you may have seen with those pictures of the five female leaders, at one point the youngest premier, until that young man from Austria, in the world. But part of that was knife edge. So it wasn't, this is the thing about luck, the party that was the second best in Finland are the Three Finns. The far right, if you like, slightly Nigel Farage party. Although this being Finland, they're much more reasonable than UKIP. But still, at one point, they wanted out of the EU. They're the party supported by quite a lot of the old, the anti-immigrant party. Anti-immigration in Finland, quite a big thing. You may be surprised, but a country that's only had immigration of any significant numbers in the last 20 years. But it was a shock, and there was a rise in racism. But again, what you see is a pragmatic dealing with this going on. Yeah, not perfect, not utopia, but the kind of idea that the society is made by people, you are together, you're going to work this out. If I was a politician in Finland, I would have a worry, which basically probably is because I'm English, of if you keep on ranking this high on all these indicators, and you're part of a free movement of labour bloc, where anybody out of the whatever how many, 400 million Europeans, can choose to move there, live there, start a family there, wouldn't you be slightly worried that you're about to be flooded by potential parents who might want to do the best thing for their children? Where else would you want to bring up a child? Where it doesn't matter what school you go to because the school effect is essentially zero. Where they will get jobs which are, if not well paid, fairly paid, with the lowest income inequality in Europe. Where they'll be able to see their family because they won't be forced to work huge numbers of hours. Where you never have to worry about your children or grandchildren being homeless. And I would, if I was Finnish in a charge, I would have a slight fear. What happens? But luckily, the worry about the cold in the winter, that might help a bit. The worry about the language. Maybe the worry about competing. Because one problem if you do move to Finland and you're trying to better your own children's chances, is your children are going to have to compete with other children who can, by the age of 16, speak and hear and listen and often write six languages age by the age of 18, was not just going to be able to pay for the private tutor, fix the GCSE 16-point question, fit the A-levels, and get them into that Russell Group University, as you know how to do here if you've got any cash. And you might think about sending them to a private school when they're only two, or that kind of number, and they don't do any better anyway. And maybe it's that that puts off that migration to Finland. It has to be part of the chance that Finland has ended up in this situation, but we should look at it. Please begin to think of some questions, because I'm not going to rattle off any more statistics at you. But what I find really interesting is how much we look at places like the United States for policy ideas. New Labour used to do this. And how little we look to those parts of Europe which are doing better and say, why can't we do that? Part of it is that those parts of Europe and parts of Japan don't blow their own trumpets. There isn't a, you know, we're great. Americans certainly blow their own trumpets. You know, do as I say, American academics write books about how the world should be run, and so on. We do this. We are the Texas of Europe in many ways. You know, we are self-assured to generalise about ourselves that we are the best free market, this is what you should do place, you should follow us. But we should really look at these places where things have worked and ask why they've worked. Last one to end then, because I'm sure this droning on for me must be getting, and I'm sure you've got some interesting questions. You've got questions, that's good. Last one to end on is a long-term effect, which is trickier to create. And I've heard this said about Norway as well. Something happens to people when you're brought up in a more equal society. And when your parents have been brought up in a more equal society. Something happens to you fundamentally about how you think and act and behave. A researcher looking at Norway, living in Norway, was once shocked to find the class of her six-year-olds suddenly all turn up at her house, uninvited, all 30 of them. And she asked the teacher, why are you here? What's happening? And the teacher, this is Norway, not Finland. The teacher said, oh, we've all come to look at everybody else's bedroom to see what it's like, to check it's all okay. Now, can you imagine that happening in Britain? Yeah, unannounced, just doing that. That's a Norway one. In Finland, people have lived now for so many years with gaps that are so low that the idea that you would allow people to die on the streets just feels wrong. In a way that I'm old enough to remember it feeling wrong in this country. Because we were more equal. When I was a child, we only had a few older men who were trans. I can remember being shocked when I first saw a younger person homeless. I can remember being utterly shocked when I first went to the United States and had to step over bodies in San Francisco because there were so many people on the streets. And then I began to get used to it. And then it becomes normal. In somewhere like Finland, the idea that people are the same, they all need to be looked after, given a chance, that has become bred in. And you can't immediately create that, just as we can't immediately change the way that we have been conditioned. I think it was Margaret Thatcher who said something about, you know, the economy may be, or economics may be the weapon, but the real target is the heart and the soul, to paraphrase her badly. And in a way, she was. The place where I think it's most interesting to do this talk about Finland, but it's hardest to get to, is Scotland. Because in Scotland, there are lots of people who have an idea that they might want to become a Scandinavian nation of low inequality. I forgot the most important statistic. The lowest infant mortality rate the world has ever known. 1.5 babies per 1,000. You think of anything as bad as losing a child? The lowest infant mortality rate the world has ever known in Finland. Compare that to Glasgow, you can see why some Scottish people may be saying, why can't we be like the other Scandinavian countries? And they could be, of course. But here's my worry. it would take or could take three generations, because you have to grow up going to the same schools as each other. You have to grow up seeing that things are possible. You have to grow up knowing that being too greedy is bad. You have to know that it's okay to curtail people's greed. You can still have amazing innovations, more paper per head. You can create Nokia. You can create Wi-Fi. You can literally build cruise ships, which aren't necessarily what the world needs right now. But you can do all of these things that the Finnish have done and the Finnish technology has done, including most recently growing protein without sunlight, which I can bore you about, but is kind of what the world needs if we're, and having a zero carbon by 2035 target, much, much, much earlier than us. But getting it fast, I don't think, is necessarily that easy. So to try to hint about you getting the book, it's about the story of how they got there, how long it took, what you achieved, and what is the downside. Because this is, again, the last fascinating thing, and I'll come to you for your question. Because you think there'd be a downside, wouldn't you? There must be some problem. If you are this equal, surely you're not letting the tall poppies bloom, as Boris Johnson now started to say, based on his teenage hero. Well, so far, it's not possible to see a downside in any of the statistics. So there may be a situation where you could get more evil than Finland, but Finland is the place that is probably the most equal that the world has actually got to, and there is no downside to it. I'll take you first, and then you in the back.
I have a very, very weak grasp of technology. Yeah. I really enjoy all that you said. In fact, how do you convince people that the economic model that we've been forced to live under for the last 100 years actually can be different? I don't even really understand that. They just really can be different.
Okay, how do you convince them? It's, well, if it was easy, it would have been done. So we underestimate how hard it is. We underestimate how ingrained the government has a purse and can't spend more money than it's in its purse message has got through. You can tell people that in the 1970s we were as equal as Sweden and Finland. We've actually been there before. And then you can tell them that we had near full employment for most of the 1970s. That people could actually tell their boss to shove their job and get another one if they want. Or that life expectancy in Sheffield was above the national average. Well, all that, the 1970s have been maligned. But you've got an upward battle to tell people about this. Or, and I think this is maybe slightly more likely to work, you can say that things got really, really bad for Finland. After the terror, after the falling apart just over 100 years ago, and after losing in the Second World War, they were in a really terrible situation, and they got out of it partly by solidarity. And it's possible that a place like this could, in various ways, be in a terrible situation. And the way to dig ourselves out of that may not be to replicate the mistakes of the past. That's partly how I would try to do it. You in the back?
Yeah, just talking about statistics and no downside and everything. How ethnically diverse?
Yeah. How many diverse is Finland? This is interesting that Finland has or claims to have, let me try to put it right, the only original European surviving group in the Sami in the north, who do cross over borders, not just in Finland. So we a long time ago slaughtered, we're all immigrants. And we actually slaughtered the original. So Finland has some diversity from not actually having slaughtered the original. There's large groups of Roma in Finland, larger than here, not as large as in many other European countries. But other ethnic minorities, it's small but growing. Finland has taken in more refugees per head than other countries. Small but growing, concentrated in particular parts of Helsinki, immediately causing worries about that. It doesn't matter what school you go to. Issue. But it's certainly a advance. In some ways, Finland and England are the opposite on this one for Europe. So because Finland was a colony, and it was poor, and nobody came, nobody migrated to Finland, then it didn't have a history of much difference. Whereas because we have the biggest empire the world has ever known, we were in some ways ahead of the rest of Europe in terms of diversity, which is one of the few ways in which we are often not at the bottom of some of these league tables in terms of our behaviour. But one last thing to say about ethnic diversity and inequality, and this is something that's rankled people who study inequality. Very equal countries tend, in effect, to reduce their ethnic diversity over time, because I'm not advocating people mixing, but because people literally mix. So in Japan, where the Americans instigated land reform start after the Second World War to create the world's most equal country because they worried about a revolution. In Japan, most of the ethnic differences that were seen in the 30s and 20s were no longer seen. People just mix with who they want because they created a 90% working class or a 90% middle class. An older example is Iceland. Iceland was a mix of, to stereotype, Vikings and their Celtic slaves. It was a slave society. It mixed. And now you look at Iceland and you say, oh, aren't Icelanders homogeneous? Well, they're not. If you look at red hair colour and green eyes, you can see. So,
well, to be honest, I mean, it just rankles to me that people give Scandinavian countries as the greatest example of the whitest countries on earth, really.
They were the whitest. You're now looking at 5 to 10% not white. Sudden change. So a sudden change occurred. But the far right in America and some of the far right in Britain looked to Scandinavian countries as their kind of ideal. So it's ironically a kind of, you know, a racist mecca. And some of the videos produced for the Free Finns were produced, you can see, because it was so slick, by money from racist Americans who have this idea of kind of racial purity. But I would say it's changed rapidly, and it's not the homogeneity of the society. There are many other places like Finland, cold, poor, near the Arctic Circle, but Siberia, you know, which haven't done well. So it's not that homogeneity. And also, if you look at one of the most divided countries in the rich world, the United States, the divisions are kept by wealth divisions, enormous wealth divisions that go back to the fact that slavery and people having no money. Wherever those wealth and income divisions in the world are largely removed, those other differences don't manage to stay. And then we say they were never there.
Curious about what you were saying in terms of the colony versus the colonizer. How well do you think Finland fits as a model for somewhere like the UK, considering that huge difference, both culturally and historically? How could it be a guiding light when it's starting from such a completely different point?
Yeah, it's very tricky. I think it's a pretty good model for, say, Wales. Wales can claim from 1200 whenever Glendower, you know, Wales makes some claims to have been the first colony, and certainly was treated in this way. All that slate and coal that was taken out of Wales, try and have a look at what was given back in return. Scotland, not quite in as good a position to claim to be a colony. It was a kind of equal part of an empire. But again, but more recently it's been treated like that in the last 30 or 40 years by London, and hence, you know, the big enemy is England. Since the 1970s, when the shipyards began to go. Ireland, certainly, plantations and colony. And then you could start playing a game with the northern cities and how they were treated and have been treated. So you could make a claim that actually, and we've internalised in some ways empire. When we lost the largest empire the world was ever known, I didn't go on about it, but you know, it really does matter. It's not that long ago, and it did make a big difference to this country. That it's where our cash came from. When we lost that, we almost turned on ourselves We started fighting internally. We wrecked the North in the 1980s. We allowed the poor to get poorer. The rich still wanted to have the wealth and the power that their grandparents had had. And that's very hard to maintain when their grandparents could think of owning part of India. So you could say that a lot of the UK has an effect being internally.
Does that almost be unpicked for Finland to be a guiding light, or is do you mean because these are very entrenched things that that is the history of this country?
Yeah.
So how can the country see Finland being reflected here if those things are so completely opposite and that's one of the functions of Finland?
Yeah, I agree. It's very difficult. It's similar to, you know, you can't easily replicate the Japanese experience of taking the land from the ruling class and evenly giving it out as evenly as you could. You know, the fact that the USA did that is quite incredible. So you could play the game of saying, oh look, you know, how white they are, they're a bit like us, you know, we were Angles, they're Finns, Scotland, they're all called land, you know, why can't we be like them? But I think we should be honest and say that part of our problem is the fact that we were so rich. And that's part of what explains things like Brexit. Why was it us out of so many European countries to lose? And part of the problem with the USA is being the world hegemon and being the richest large country in the world. It actually makes you, why are almost a quarter of the prisoners in the world are locked up in the USA? Where does that come from? And it's partly from the, if you like, the colonial success that the USA has had. So I accept your point.
It's more just a question. I'm wondering, because I think you're right. Yeah. I think it is a brilliant example. It's just where, how those pieces fit in the jigsaw of this country, how you put them in.
But it's hard. You can go back. So in my kind of little pod of history of the world, the USA is currently the most powerful, which is a country with 10 fleets, 3 of which are cyber fleets and so on. We were the most powerful for 100 years before that. Before that, it was the United Provinces, part of the Netherlands. And they are now a much nicer place, but there's still kind of little echoes of it. And Sweden had an empire, and you know, has managed to get over that. But this is the thing about patience, about, you know, work for it. But the idea of superiority, you know, 2 World Wars, 1 World Cup, and a semi-final, that idea of superiority is ingrained. It's ingrained in schools from having the map with the pink bits on, ingrained in textbooks. My A-level geography required me to learn what resources, rubber, tin and so on, could we get from each country that we could best manage because we knew what we were doing.
I've got a great day for
that. Go on, you've got your hand up, sir.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
This is more about Finn's association with alcohol.
Yeah.
The story I would tell was I was in Leningrad, 1987, 70th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. And I was in a bar, and you couldn't get many drinks, I mean, compared to the bar here with Dan. You had to bribe the barman, etc.
We're still open to bribery, we'll take anything, it's been a tough 2 months.
Anyway, good with Finns coming. I never saw them, they were so drunk. But these went straight on the hard spirits, and I was almost taken aback. I suppose my question really is the Finns' relationship with the former Soviet Union, even Imperial Russia. What's your view? How has that shaped Finland? Its respect, because effectively they're at war, weren't they? Before in World War II, the Finns. Over
It's a very tricky relationship. I mean, the Finns have managed it brilliantly well. So the Finnish ambassador's house is next to the Russian ambassador's house in London. Finland's had to play this unsuccessfully. It's only by chance. Easily, Finland could have been at some point early on at Crimea and just taken back and said to be Russian. And then we'd never be telling this story. The alcohol stories, the change by age is incredible. and you see this elsewhere. In Denmark, I'll be having a cigarette later, but in Denmark, old Danes smoke like anything. They have some of the worst lung cancer rates in the world. Young Danes don't. In Finland, there's a similar learning. And also here in England, you know, it's annoying how clean our students are in some ways. So, but certainly legal drugs are very interesting to know. But that was there. It has reduced dramatically. And it was also related to the homelessness rates, which were very high. 10,000 people sleeping rough, well, not exactly rough, you sleep in the heated toilets in Helsinki because otherwise you'd die. But literally sleeping in public toilets was related to alcohol. So the two things have to be dealt with. So part of the housing first policy, which is we stick you in a house first and then we deal with the reasons why you're on the street, was dealing with alcohol. But it's generally, alcohol, we've generally had a success story around the world, and Finland's had that as well. Somebody else, I think, had their hand up. In the back?
Yes. Oddly, in a WhatsApp group today, we're having that conversation, and it's a typical British conversation for British people on the left these days. Which country would you emigrate to? And obviously, the Scandinavian nations came up, and I mentioned that I've come across about this evening. My friend, who's his family roots in Sri Lanka, said that her best friend, who is Congolese, lived in Denmark, and the racism was so appalling that she, that they need not be had to leave. And I was wondering, I know you say that equality, generally the equality of income, but is that something that you see in the statistics? Like, I know anecdote is not. Is that something that is visible, and what's been doing to solve that problem?
So what we've got in the book are actually a series of anecdotes about it, including from one of the first non-white Finnish politicians, and what he had to deal with. So it's certainly true, although of course you can have the same experience in Britain with the anecdotes. Or if you're Eastern European in the run-up to Brexit, you could have got the same. I don't think, it's not easy to measure, there are some sort of standard questions over who would you be happy with your children marrying across Europe. And the nice thing about those is they all just get better over time, which, you know, it's a positive story. I don't think it's any worse than any other part of Europe with a low proportion of people from African countries and not around for that many years. The Free Finns are certainly racist, but no more racist than UKIP was in the Brexit Party, who, hey, you know, you're calling them racist, but you know, whenever they meet the old white men, they're not exactly enamoured by what happened to their Britain. And what you don't get in Finland, which you do get, coming back to Brexit, I won't do. I did a book a few years ago on Brexit, and we looked into the background of a lot of the funders of Brexiteers, and found that many of them, like Lord Ashcroft, grew up in a colony and had black servants. And what you don't get in Finland is this idea of natural superiority to those people who you governed over from that. So you don't have that kind of a thing going on, which we're now very good at disguising in England. So people with very racist views know very much how not to talk about it, but to say things like, well, of course there are great genetic differences in IQ, aren't there, and you can't solve it all, you know. So we get it in a different, much more polite way than the out and obvious racism, but it's certainly an issue. Helsinki University is doing a lot of things, as you might expect, but they are, I would say, what they're doing is more pragmatic and designed to actually have an effect, as opposed to what we often do in the UK, which is to show how much we apparently care and say the right thing, but don't actually worry that our black students are much more likely to drop out than our white students. Put it really bluntly, as long as they stay for 2 or 3 years, it's not a problem because they pay the cash. You don't want somebody dropping out after 6 months. And that's a very different attitude to somewhere like Finland, where, of course, like most of Europe, you don't pay to go to university, because why on earth would you? And that changes it. So, yes, a problem, but not any worse than, say, rural Holland. where I was watching the queue to be fed at the Centre Park with a black man, and they decided that they were going to serve us last. I could just about remember the 1970s, and I thought, oh, we've been here before. We know what you're doing. So not to excuse, but just to say that it's not worse, but it could be. All it would take is a popular, articulate, able, young, as opposed to the old men, politician in Finland, who could so cleverly stir it up, and particularly as at some point, inevitably, Finland's going to have to drop out of this opposition and decline in some way. And of course, it had a recession in the 90s. And you could easily see a future where a dissatisfaction with what's going on is then linked with racism, and you suddenly have a Finnish government which is the opposite to the one we currently have, not a rainbow coalition. Anybody? Yes? Political leadership or where it was political leadership and activists thinking that Finland was terribly, terribly behind because it really was extremely poor in the 60s, you know, people couldn't heat their houses and things, and looking to what progressive models were in the USA, where, you know, they started the idea of high school. And you go locally because some are funding better than others. And the comprehensives, which was sweeping across England at the time, and it was seen as the future, the new model. Our problem must be our grammar schools. And it was also linked to the unspeakable thing in Finland, which is partly the terror. The Finns really don't like speaking about the slaughter that occurred around that time in the First World War, when Finn killed Finn. And who was successful. But the decades afterwards, a prominent Finnish person, that's all I say, was telling me he grew up in a village where there were two shops. And if you were red, you used one shop, and if you were white, you used the other shop. And that was only 40 years ago. And of course, you can guess which group got into the grammar schools and which didn't. And it's a little bit different from our history of grammar schools. They are not the old ones called grammar schools because of King Edward, whatever. The grammar schools created because of the Act in 1944, which made the grammar schools free before you had to pay 6 shillings or 2 shillings to go. Our grammar schools, when they came in, were at first a bit emancipatory. They gave them a chance, which is partly why a particular generation has warm feelings about them. My university suddenly got grammar school boys and some grammar school girls coming to it. Ken Loach, that kind of thing. Very different from the Finnish idea of grammar schools. But when they saw us moving forward again, not long after having done this, and having technical schools, secondary moderns and grammars, and secondary modern sounds new and modern, you know, we were changing again in this idea of a comprehensive education, we were building new universities in the 60s, built some white heater technology, the UK looked very good. Our housing policy was great. We weren't taking part in Vietnam, you know, and people from Finland came, wasn't just us, but decided to try to take some of that back and do it. The people who would have opposed it would have been the better off families whose children had a better chance, but they were talked down and defeated. But it was a battle. But I think similar to here. It was called Section 10 or something of the Act. A county had to decide in the 60s that it's going to enact Section 10. And of course Kent didn't, and Essex didn't, and so on. So here it was county by county, fight by fight, to get it through. And of course we've lost it now. You know, all the schools in my county of Oxfordshire, all the secondary schools are academy. We have our first new secondary school in 50 years. It's a free school. It has to be. Academies are run in my city by the Vicar Learning Trust, whose chief executive, who used to be headmaster of one, now earns £200,000 a year and sends his kids to Abingdon Private School at £30,000. You know, I told you I'd get to moaning about Britain. incredible what we've actually torn apart. And now we have selection by self. If you want to get into a musical school, are you only good at musical instruments? You know, that's the way you do it. The competitive my kids go into, fairly mixed until 16. Don't tell the kids this, but if you haven't got 4 A's and 4 B's, well, sorry, we don't want you doing an A level. Mm-hmm. You've got 1 week to work out where you're going. 40% of the kids are forced to leave at 16, and that's the working class children and children from the estates. Yeah, and that's, so, the contrast between what we're doing, what we've done, and the fact that they actually came here, copied it, but then implemented it well, they spend less on it. So they spend less on education in Finland. We spend an enormous amount, mainly because we spend so much on that 7% of kids. But teachers are paid less in Finland, because Finland's a more equal society. So you don't need to pay a teacher 20%, 30%, 40% over the median so that they can feel they're competing with somebody else with a degree. Teachers are paid less in Finland, but they're given autonomy. They're allowed to do what they want to do. The kids take their shoes off. When delegations from Britain go to the Finnish schools, these schools with these most amazing results, the standard first impression is it's chaos. The children are being allowed to do what they want to do. You can't have that. Why aren't you making them all sit down and be silent? And even though these are educational people going out to see this, they still can't get it at first. That actually forcing silence in schools in the way that we now do, and seeing discipline is so important, and training people to pass particular exams, like a dog being jumping through hoops, doesn't actually teach you very much. Whereas the Finnish model is, and it came from us. It's what people criticise about Britain in the 60s and 70s. It's what has worked over there. Was there somebody over you at the front?
I was thinking, you know, you were saying it might take about 3 generations for England to Finland. And I'm Irish. And I'm thinking that Ireland actually has a lot in common with Finland. You know, Civil War, 700 years ago, the very Irish context. Never won a war, never won anything. Kind of a big brother relationship with England, constantly looking across Russia and Finland. But I look at Ireland and I see it just as a mini America, you know, which just rejected the idea of corporation tax at 15%. It just feels like we're going in a really strange direction, very different to where life is going. But do you think with the right kind of mix that Ireland could actually be more like Finland, quicker?
The really remarkable thing about Ireland in international statistics is its GDP, which is almost completely false because of Google and Amazon and so on being headquarters. So I think what Ireland really needs is for the EU to stop letting Ireland headquarter those companies in Europe. Promoting the American way of life in Ireland and doing that. And if the EU doesn't, then the amount of money that can be raised, even from 15% corporation tax, on having the American corporations based in Ireland, has that problem. It's really interesting why, when you look at these series of successful countries, going from Finland, Sweden, Norway, Iceland, pretty successful, Denmark, my Ireland. What was the nasty phrase was picked? Do you remember that? Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal, the countries that are doing badly in the last crash. And it kind of went round and kind of almost got Britain, but Ireland was on the edge of it. Ireland has choices. But it's been deeply scarred by the legacy of what the British left, in a way that Finland has managed to avoid it. And quite how or why is that different, I don't know. But it is. So I often say that the UK, we have the lowest public sector spending in Europe, except for Ireland, slightly. But it's, I won't go on about it. It's partly to do with that population base. But
so, Danny, when you talked about kind of throwback to the Empire and two World Wars and one World Cup, I wasn't
the semi-final.
Well, I wasn't here during the Euros, and I came back to see a poster in the door that my elders had written that said, if you're going to sing two World Wars and one World Cup or two or German bombs, go away. The war was 80 years ago, get over it. And I was so proud of it. So it shows that the young generation are hopefully getting away from that. But more than anything, if the Finnish model is so good, what's stopping everyone from doing it? Why aren't we just kind of saying, fuck, Boris, you should be doing this? What's stopping us back?
Well, other parts of Europe are often, you can take regions of other European countries and get statistics that are almost good as Finland. Or you can actually take parts of Tokyo, which actually beat Finland with mortality. So it's not, Finland just happens to have the right border. It's a bit like the city of Hull, where the border just goes around the council estates and rather than rich bits, and Hull always comes out looking really bad. Finland, because of its border, because other countries have parts doing worse, things like that. So there is conflict. We just don't look in that direction. We look to the United States because I think we have a kind of complex that they took over from us. They must have got it right. Let's look there. And when I say we, I mean Gordon Brown, who, you know, every year he would go to Cape Cod, and several senior Labour ministers would take jobs in Harvard later when they got out of the job, constantly going and looking at the US models for how do you deal with housing segregation. And if your Labour Party is doing that, and your Labour Party is not imaginative, you really are pretty stuck. So that's a battle that needs to be fought and needs to be won. Just never look to the United States. Just in almost everything, because they score so badly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is it about instant gratification and, you know, that immediacy? You talked right at the beginning about, you joked about perhaps there is a downside, you can't get a pizza at 10 o'clock at night, but our society and culture these days is very much, you know, what you want, when you want, which has the circular effect of people having to work 24/7 or wherever it is on social hours. So it's that kind of, is that American thing, you mentioned it, damage. That's
running
down. I thought maybe that's where the answer is.
You're right. When people look at the World Happiness Scores and try to work out why are the Finns, because Finnish people do not come over as looking particularly happy. Right? It's a stereotype. And what's really funny is that Finnish people have stereotypes about Finnish people in different regions of Finland, of course. And they will tell you that the people in the West are really don't say anything. You know, and you're thinking, you don't say much yourself. The happiness question. The question of wording is something like, all things considered, how happy are you today? Now, the Finns consider all things, which we don't. And they go, well, it could be much worse, couldn't it? And so they come up with the seven. Japanese are brilliant at this, or even France. Of just saying I'm average today, because of course you will on average be averagely happy. We tend to be a little bit American. The American immediate answer to another question about how happy are you without the auxiliary sentences is 8 out of 10. I'm doing fine, I'm great. The standard answer to the question, how are you, is great. Now we have this, you ask me, am I right, how are you? Of course, politely you say, I'm great, you don't go, actually, things are a bit crap. You know, the pandemic went on a bit longer than we really thought it was going to.
I do quite often.
You don't know. And in the US, there's a culture of smiling, always looking happy, faking it. And I think we have copied that a bit, whereas in countries that are more equal, people can appear much more dour. But it's simply because they're not constantly. I would say, the other point I have, I should learn this, the question, how are you, in many countries, particularly Greece is one, the literal translation is, how is your health? So that's what people are asking. And then the answer to that is often not so much absolutely brilliant. You know, you're more likely to give a measured answer to that. But yes, the instant gratification, the thing that, you know, things will get good.
The other thing on instant gratification and gratification in general is, if you are a much more equal country, if your teachers are only paid a bit over average, and your head teachers just a bit more than them, and nobody's paid £200,000 with a special edition sports card he sends his child to average school, what I'm bitter about headmaster. There isn't that gratification there to look for. It isn't something that, you know, the idea that you can be that rich and that wealthy is just so unlikely. But also, if you're taught better maths at school, you know your chances of being in the 1% and only 1%. Not that if you try hard enough, you can all get there. And there's a lot of Finnish proverbs about happiness is a space between too much and too little. Learn to be happy with what you've got, but often come from a past of having very little. But they are very useful proverbs today. Lowest rates of mental ill health in young people in Europe, if you want anything to try and sell. And still they worry about mental ill health. And the Guardian writes articles about the poor mental ill health of people in Finland and Scandinavia. And they quote the statistics and you go, yes, but ours are twice as bad. And that is partly to do with working out what to accept in the world, but also the crappy jobs are just not that crappy. And the jobs that are supposedly better, where you'll be highly rewarded, you're not allowed to hang around not doing very much and then get paid and lost out for it. So you can genuinely choose, you've got this freedom to decide, do I want to cut people's hair? Do I want to bake pizza? Do I want to be a lawyer? Do I want to be a teacher? And you go for what you want to do, not for what you have to do if you're going to go to get a house. And that is a much better route for self-satisfaction and being pleased with yourself than the model that says you need to make sure you're earning more than everybody else.
What score would you give yourself, Danny, on happiness?
On the happiness, well, you're all smiling. Nobody's asked me a horrible question yet. So I'm 8 at the moment. I've got through most of it, so you know I'm going back to it. But that's at the moment. Normally, when my wife asks me this, I say 6.5, just to annoy her.
What's the
goal
with that in all of this, in terms of promoting more equal view of society? Whereas here, it seems to be the press is driving division and hate diversity is promoting politics of envy. So what role can the press do from that?
Yeah, the press in Finland is unbelievable. So it feels almost as big as ours. We're a country of, 5 million people, 5.5 million people. The number of outlets is enormous. Half of the references in the book, and there's a ridiculous number of references, so sorry, the book's a bit big, because Anika insisted that every fact had to be referenced, because she's Finnish. Half of the references come from media sources, and they're almost like academic style levels of getting things right. And the media interrogates every action of government. There was the most minor scandal with a post-workers' strike, and the minister resigns. Ministers in Finland are always resigning. The minute anything goes slightly wrong, which they were ever so slightly associated with, and that's the press. Constantly, Finland's large numbers of outlets in Finland with stories that's going on. So they rank highest in the world press freedom constantly on this. And it's seen as an enjoyable, good job to do. I've been interviewed by a Finnish journalist, and it's really tricky because they're not going to do puff pieces. You know, they do want to find something where they can, but they make it clear, I'm going to have a go at you as well as say this is good, because it wouldn't be right otherwise. They're not balanced, just because you must have made some mistakes and I want to know what they are. And it's just nicer. So you've got to have a look again.
We've probably got time for one more, because, just to let you know, all of Danny's books are available outside. Book sales make tonight possible. Christmas, as I say, every event gets closer every week. We can't decide on that. For Danny to come to us is simply astonishing. So book sales are fantastic. And Danny will be signing outside later. So we'll have one final question, and then we will talk Finnish for the rest of the evening. All things Finnish.
guy at the back.
So you mentioned that the country is completely unchanged and there's such a terrible time sector around there.
Yeah. Oh, I'll just tell you what Finland did. So Finland have been storing PPE since the 1957 flu pandemic, right, ready for the next one. That's where it starts. They made one mistake on one order of PPE of 10,000 masks and the minister resigned. Okay, storing it. Now, but I should say, Finland is very fortunate geographically, it's about out ahead of these. It was in the right place. I think it's still less than 1,000 deaths in total. Less than we got on several of our worst days.
Have
we seen
that, 1,000 deaths?
Yeah, less than 1,000 deaths in Finland. And Nico and I have looked at it. What's really interesting is that the population and the press are still highly critical of the Finnish government, of what they could have done better. And in particular, slightly incensed at the moment, because a group of Finnish football fans came back from St. Petersburg and weren't all tested at the border. But, you know, Finland has one of the lowest rates in Europe. It's partly geographical, but it's partly a government. And the arguments were, a lot of the arguments were about freedom and the Emergency Powers Act, and whether the government should use it or not, or whether this was bad enough. And the government decided not to use the Emergency Powers Act, because the Finnish people wanted their freedom while keeping deaths in total below 1,000 for the whole thing. So very, very different. But the beginnings of it, just to end on, you know, this is what you know. Remembering from 1957 to store PPE, when flu hits us in 1957, the worst flu pandemic since the 1919 one, when flu hit us, in the worst week of that pandemic, the Prime Minister, Harold Macmillan, said to the population, "You've never had it so good." And that's all we remember him for saying. Because we just let it sweep over us back then. The Finns remembered it, they prepared for the next one. A bit boring, but very, very sensible. You know, if you want another reason to say, be a bit more like Finland, that's certainly one. Thank you very, very much.
Danny Dorigan!